So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribe. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Human trafficking and the sexual exploitation of women have been in the news a lot lately, with charges filed against billionaire hedge fund manager Jeffrey Epstein. There are Jeffrey Epsteins in Milwaukee. So Wisconsin and I came to, we'll talk about this in a minute, a safe house for those who are being rescued from human trafficking to talk about three people who are working in the Milwaukee area on human trafficking. To my left is Jarrett Luckett. He's executive director of Exploit No More. Melania Klemowitz is the executive coordinator of Exploit No More. Josh Benton is the anti-traffic coordinator for UMOS, which is a nonprofit group that works with, your website says, underserved populations.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Around the state.
Well, we talked about the Epstein thing, but let's go back. How did you get involved in anti-trafficking? How long have you been doing it? Any set of circumstances that when you first got into it broke your heart and you really had to devote yourself to this, Jared, please?
Yeah, so I found out about human trafficking about 10, 11 years ago or so. And just like you said, it broke my heart. It crushed me. I didn't know that this type of situation was happening to kids and adults all across the world. And it really compelled me to look more into it, to see what was happening in our area, to see what actions were happening to help the victims as well. And that's how I got involved. My thought was, you know, if what would I want somebody else to do if it was my child who was caught up in this and they were being abused? What would I want somebody else to do? And my thought was, at least people can know. At least people can know about the issue. At least people can know about recognizing signs of trafficking, what happens in the world of human trafficking, how it all comes about, the buyers and so forth, the demand. And that's how I got involved.
Melania, please, on your website, you say, what's your motto? Women are the strongest when together. Was that a factor in why you got involved?
It is, yeah. So I've been at Exploit No More for about 2.5 years. And one of the things that the home that I was raised in was women are always better together. We're always stronger together. And it was one of those things that I really held on to. But then when I was a senior in high school, I had a daughter of my own. And that really brought home a whole different concept and a whole different meaning to what my mom and grandma and aunts and uncles had raised me to believe about women. And so that was a driving factor, is just having a daughter of my own and being part of the fight for freedom for women and men who are being trafficked. Specifically for her and just creating a better world.
Thank you. Josh, please.
Yeah, I grew up in a home where I think I was taught at a young age that humans are valued and are of the highest value from a young age. So I've worked in the domestic violence world for a while, so I directed a shelter, and I think I realized within kind of an overall umbrella of victims of crime in general or victims of trauma or sexual trauma, we just needed to do better at knowing what trafficking is. Like Jared said, what is the issue? You know, we hear it, we talk about it, but what got me prompted to kind of be more involved in my role now is, hey, how are we best identifying victims so that we can serve them? So,
what do residents of Milwaukee, no, let's broaden it. What do residents of Wisconsin need to know about human trafficking in Wisconsin? Josh, you want to start?
Yeah. I think, first of all, they need to know it's happening. You know, it's not, it certainly is an international issue that's happening around the world, and that's horrible, but it is happening in our home state of Wisconsin. You know, it's happening in communities that we are familiar with. It's happening in towns that we know. It's happening right in our backyard here in Milwaukee. So I think the main thing is that folks need to know that it's happening here.
Any PS, Melania, Jarrett, on that?
I think also the population that it affects. A lot of people are, they want to, or in their mind, it's a woman who's in a basement, or a young girl who's in a basement in a cage with chains around her, and she can't go anywhere. And in reality, trafficking victims can be men, women, boys, and girls. They can identify as LGBTQ. They can identify as immigrants. They can identify as people who grew up in the suburbs. And we hear stories all the time of traffickers who are trafficking minors on the weekends and sending them home to their parents on Sunday night so they can go back to school during the week. So it can be anybody. And that's not to make everybody fearful for their lives. It's just, if you don't know what to look for, you're going to miss it. And if you miss it, somebody's going to slip through the cracks. And so being aware of fully what it looks like and who a victim could be or is really important.
Jared, please.
Yeah, definitely. Echo everything that Josh and Melania said. What I will add to that is it crosses all socioeconomic backgrounds. Many times when people think of societal challenges, they may often think of someone who comes from poverty, who comes from a single family household, but that is not the case with human trafficking. How many police officers who we know would put it, where you have drug trafficking, you almost always have human trafficking. And so we know people in all throughout Wisconsin, use drugs. There's drug task force all throughout the state and so forth. It's an issue that crosses all different types of barriers. There's no one specific kind of victim who this impacts. And so it's important to note that victims can literally be anybody. They can come from a nuclear family, they can come from poverty, they can come from wealth. It runs the gamut.
So there is no demographic profile of a victim of human trafficking. But I read a national stat that 97% of them are female. Does that hold up based on your experiences?
Can I take that one?
Yeah.
So when it comes to statistics, oftentimes everything is underreported when it comes to trafficking. Only about 2% of trafficking victims, male or female, sex trafficked or labor trafficked, identify as victims of trafficking. And because of the stigma already surrounding men and boys who have gone through physical abuse, sexual violence, they're even less likely to come forward. So that statistic of 97% is definitely skewed. The majority of victims that we work with were specifically in sex trafficking. UMOS covers more labor trafficking as well. We mainly see women and girls. But there was just a situation a few weeks ago of a young boy who was being trafficked in the Fox Valley area. So unfortunately the statistics are kind of a miss because of just how things are reported.
Josh, the mention of labor trafficking, how big a problem is that? And I do want to come back to sexual trafficking, but
yeah.
Talk about labor trafficking.
Yeah, it's a big problem. So we see a lot of labor trafficking around the whole state. So UMOS, we have offices kind of throughout the state, one in Fox Valley, one in Madison. And we've observed that there's a lot of different platforms that allow labor trafficking to thrive, whether it be like certain work visas that come into the Wisconsin, fiance visas are a platform that we've seen, like domestic servitude situations within the home. We have a caseload of agricultural workers, so men who came here on an agricultural visa to work in Wisconsin were trafficked and exploited for their labor. So
it's a shorthand definition of labor trafficking, please. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so labor trafficking is, the word trafficking is forced work. So people are forced into, by force, fraud, and coercion, forced into forced labor, and that can come in a variety of platforms and ways. So the purpose of the exploitation is for the labor services.
Okay. Now let's come back to the human trafficking for sex purposes. Well, talk about Exploit No More. It's been around for how long, Jarrett? And talk about the origin of this, what will become a safe house for victims?
Yeah, definitely. Before we hop into that, if you don't mind, Can I touch back on the labor
Absolutely.
Piece? Because I think it's important.
Please do.
I think it's important to know, especially in this political climate where, with immigration and so forth, and I don't want to get into immigration law and all that type of, all those things, but it's important to note that, everything that Josh mentioned, people are coming here legally who are being exploited. They're not being snuck into the country or anything like that. They're going through the proper process, getting the proper documentation, and it's people in the United States who are exploiting these individuals. Right? So it's you know, American people who are exploiting these individuals. And so in the political space, where some individuals may run their platform on, or part of their platform on, human trafficking or immigration, different things like that, that shouldn't be, that topic shouldn't be exploited, because they're coming here legally and they're being exploited on this side of the border by Americans. So I just had to always try to toss that in there.
Yeah, for sure.
But talk about exploit and how long it's been around. How's it funded? And the purpose of this Safe Home.
So we've been around for just over 6 years. And we focus on three key areas of increasing awareness, which awareness helps to lead to prevention of individuals being victims of human trafficking. We also focus on advocacy, advocating for better laws, better rights, better services for victims as well. And then aftercare, helping individuals who have come out of the life, or who they may also still be in the life of human trafficking, helping them with the capacity that we have to meet some of their needs. A part of that aftercare is our Safe Home that we're in now. And so we've, for close to a year, we've been doing more research on, you know, what are the needs? How have the needs shifted from when we first started 6 years ago to today? What are the needs of survivors? And we are pushing up on making some decisions on how we're going to utilize this home. Some really amazing options where working with our community partners, seeing how can we come alongside organizations like UMOS, like Pathfinders, and provide services and outlets for victims of trafficking to help them move forward in their life.
And will victims who are coming out of the life, will they be here for a month or 2 months, or don't you have that programming?
Yeah, so it all depends on how we utilize the home. So one of the two large needs are emergency shelter. So let's say there's a sting operation. That's what I'm looking for. Let's say there's a sting operation, and there's a victim or multiple victims who need a place to stay for a few nights while UMOS is figuring out what's going to be the next step for short term living, for long term housing. Being able to provide a more emergency type shelter in that regard. Another massive need is transitional housing. So for minors who are transitioning out of foster care, so 17, 18 years old, up to around 25 years old, who are transitioning or have transitioned out of foster care, and they aren't ready to, you know, go off and live on their own, and they need some help so they can thrive in life. That population is extremely vulnerable, and so that length of stay, it can look like a widespread. It depends on kind of where they're at in their life.
Is there any common circumstances that tragically lead a woman or a young girl into being human trafficked? Is there any commonality, any common path that you found?
Everybody has vulnerabilities. So usually our answer to that question is every single person that you ever will meet in your entire life has a vulnerability. And a trafficker's job, an abuser's job, is to exploit those vulnerabilities. And so vulnerabilities could look like lack of basic needs. I'm hungry. My family is hungry. And if a trafficker comes in and says, I can get you a hamburger, that is their in to beginning the process of trafficking them on a regular basis. Something like lack of confidence. I don't have a lot of friends. Whether it's I'm an adult and I don't have a lot of friends because I just don't have a good support system, or I'm a kid and I'm going to school and I just feel out of place, a trafficker is going to recognize that vulnerability and meet that vulnerability and then exceed it in the wrong ways. They are going to take those vulnerabilities and build that person up in all of the wrong and unhealthy ways in order to manipulate them into being trafficked.
How do they keep control of the victim?
I think a lot of it is, you know, psychological and threats and isolation and deprivation of basic needs. And like Melania was saying, this trafficker can create dependence. You know, the victim can be dependent on them for whatever it may be, whether it be basic needs or maybe they forced them into a drug addiction or something along those lines. So I think a lot of times we, like you were saying before, we look for like the chains and the locked door and stuff like that. It goes a lot deeper than that.
Well, I read a New York Times story in which someone who does what you did said, I have found that victims, once we get them out and they begin to get help, feel ashamed. Is that right? Why?
Definitely. I think a part of it is depending on what they've been told since they've come out, right? Mm-hmm. And realizing that what happened, what they were doing, wasn't the healthiest thing. It wasn't the best thing. And so even if we haven't gone through a situation like that, right, like we're usually the worst critics of ourselves, yeah. Right? Like in general, like, you know, somebody can think we look great, but like, oh, we're like, oh my gosh, my outfit is terrible, right? And so we're typically the worst critic of ourselves. And so and when going through something like that, coming out of that, that criticism just amplifies. I was talking to a young lady recently where she wasn't trafficked, but she just made some not so great decisions with some interactions online. And you could just tell the shame that she had. And she even mentioned it in the few things that she said about how she felt about the situation. And so, you know, usually that individual often takes that burden onto themselves.
Is there a common path to bring a person out of being trafficked, either sexually or labor? Is there cries for help, or is there some point where you can have an intervention, or even the term rescue? Is that a fair term? So can somebody talk about the process of bringing out?
That's a loaded question. There's a lot of... Jarrett looked right over, and I was like, oh, gosh. I think that's a loaded question because it can look so different.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So somebody who's been forced into labor trafficking, their response to get them out of that is going to look very different than somebody who's being trafficked out of a strip club or trafficked over a lunch hour. That's going to look very different. I think one thing that we always say, and I know you guys, this is something that you believe in as well, but during any recovery, right, whether it's a physical recovery of people coming out of a trafficking situation, our number one responsibility to them and our response to them is meeting them where they're at. So if that person just wants to sleep, you can sleep. Our job is to give you power back and to empower you. If you want to sleep for 5 days and then you want to talk, that is what we are going to offer you, the space to do that. If you want to make a report to the police and get medical attention right now, we are going to give you the space to do that and give them the power, male, female, boy, girl, LGBTQ, suburban mom, inner city kid, we are going to give you that power back to make decisions for yourself in your healing recovery the moment we come in contact with you. And I think that's something that we all keep in mind whenever there's a recovery happening.
Josh, when someone is being labor trafficked and they want to come out of that, different process because you're dealing with job laws and employees, things like that.
Yeah.
Are you finding they're often not as emotionally damaged, perhaps, as someone who's been sexually trafficked?
I mean, certainly sexual trauma is a different form and can be more severe for sure. But when we're dealing with foreign nationals, so people who are from another country and they're being exploited here and they're interfacing with providers or law enforcement, the main thing, they're unsure of their immigration status. They're unsure if they're owed any money from back wages that they haven't had. And because the reason they have come to this country and to this state is to a lot of times send money back home to support their family. So there's just kind of so many things that are unclear. So what our best practice along the same lines is we try to resource them with an attorney, an immigration attorney, who can protect them from whether it be deportation proceedings or whatever the case may be, because we're saying that they're a victim of crime. So they have the rights to a lot of resources. So we try to provide those so that they feel comfortable and have enough rapport to go about that process.
Well, in 6 months when this safe house is open, are you going to be able to offer both psychological counseling and medical counseling and other types of help for people who are coming out? Is that really the goal here?
Yeah, so looking at how do we work with our community partners, partnership and collaboration is so vital in this space because one organization can't do it all. To be able to provide all of those resources under one roof is really expensive. And so we look at what's already happening in the community, who's already doing it really well, and how can we work with them. And so a lot of collaboration and partnership is what the basis of our operations will be.
Melania, you used a very term I want to come back to. If you don't know what to do, are you talking about parents, siblings, people who are worried about maybe a family member? My question is, what should they know? What should they do? And you can all take a turn on that important question.
Absolutely. So the first, there's kind of like two ways we could take that one. But when it comes to like prevention and awareness, building communication within your family and within the people in your tribe that you hang out with, that's super important because communication builds honesty and builds trust. And so if somebody is in a situation where they could be hurt, they are more likely to come to you and ask for help. The other thing on the other end of that is if you do believe somebody in your family or in your life is being trafficked, calling the National Human Trafficking Hotline number, which is run by Polaris Project. That number is 888-3737-888. We always say to call that number because they're a nationwide resource, and they have connections locally all over the United States so that people can get connected with the right people. Calling 911 may not be a good option because that person may have interacted with law enforcement before and law enforcement didn't respond in a healthy or productive manner. And so by calling the National Human Trafficking Hotline number, you're able to get connected specifically with somebody who knows how to respond to your critical and critical and also an often emergency situation.
Yeah, this is so important. I want to give both Josh and Jared a chance. What should people know about labor trafficking, human trafficking, advice?
Yeah, I agree. I think calling the hotline and people who are specifically trained on trafficking and know how to advocate and kind of help along a survivor of trafficking is just vital. Kind of going to the right partners and knowing the right resources to call.
Is there things that a parent or a sibling should look for, Jared, in terms of withdrawal or distancing themselves from family members? Excuse me.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to communication, like Melania said, communication is so important. And so having healthy communication before any type of concern comes up is really important, because if you do have healthy, open communication, and when you, like Josh mentioned earlier about how a trafficker may try to isolate, right? And so isolation is going to change the conversation that child is having with their family, with their peers, and so forth. And so when you're able to foster healthy communication from the beginning, when the isolation starts to happen, you start to see the changes, right? And so then that's where you start to ask, what's going on, right? And so if you have that relationship, it should foster more healthy communication.
So this is, I'm reminded of that old saying, it doesn't matter what they say to you, just give them a chance to say to you, right?
Yes.
Say that to you.
Right.
I said at the start of the show that there are Jeffrey Epsteins operating in the Milwaukee area. Some viewer may think that was not true, but examples? There are?
Yeah. The national average buyer across the U.S. and Wisconsin as well is a middle-aged white male who's college educated, married, and has children. That's a typical profile of a buyer. And I'm sure you guys can echo that with individuals who, we've talked to, cases we have worked with, where, those survivors, those victims of trafficking were saying, their type of buyers, their clients, if you will, were people who had money. They were able to buy those services. And some of those services aren't always sex. It could look like escort. It could look like, you know, having a girlfriend for an event or different things like that. So it's not, the exploitation isn't always just sexual. There's other types of exploitation in that.
What type of psychological damage are we talking about, both with sexual exploitation and labor trafficking?
The average person who's coming out of the life, they have a level of trauma and PTSD. So they've done brain scans to study what their brains look like. That level of trauma and PTSD in their brain mirrors somebody or is greater than somebody who has been in active combat in war. So their psychological trauma and how they view the world has drastically changed from somebody who has not gone through a trafficking situation. So, and again, that misbalance in their brain could look like they've developed an eating disorder or an addiction. That could also look like mental health, like schizophrenia or paranoia. But it all comes back to how their brain reacts to trauma. And that is, they go through a significant amount of trauma.
Then how long does it take to bring them back to some semblance of reality? I mean, every individual is different. But is there psychological help for them to help them get better? Or is that really a struggle to find professionals who can interact and move them in the process of recovering?
That's a large question. I think the beauty of like partners like Exploit No More and us and others who do kind of certain things, but kind of we all have the same goal, is when a survivor of trafficking exits their time of exploitation, many times they're forced to rebuild every area of their life, whether it be their mental health, their physical health, their job prospects, all of those things. So to your question, it's, you know, it's different for everybody, but it is, it takes a lot of hands and a lot of minds to be able to bring somebody to sustainability. So
the criminal justice system, as it increasingly gets clogged with drive-by shootings and drugs and tragically cartels, are they able to devote the resources to prosecuting traffickers and pimps?
I would say no.
No.
Just from what we've seen and what we know, and officers and detectives that we know, there's so much that they have to deal with. You know, even with FBI, some of the FBI agents we know, where they deal with victim services like all throughout the state, and there's only like one or two, I think, like for all of Wisconsin.
All of Wisconsin, and
they deal with more than just human trafficking, yeah, like bank robberies, all type of stuff. So you figure, you know, the level in which human trafficking is happening throughout Wisconsin, and with the FBI alone, you have like one or two agents who focus on that, plus other crimes on their workload, where you have hundreds, thousands of young people. We were talking to a group, and they work with the Milwaukee Health Department, and they work with a lot of young people. And so we were looking at the numbers and what they were talking about, and with the numbers of the population that they work with, it's roughly one in every 20 kids that they work with who have been a victim of trafficking.
Mm-hmm. One in 20.
Roughly one in 20.
Thank you.
So, and that's just, you know, that's not an official study, but, you know, from looking at our conversation, the youth, the caseload that they have, how many trafficking victims that they have within that caseload on average, it's roughly one in every 20 kids. So that puts about one in every classroom.
Oh.
Yeah. That, just with what they do.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not even all of Wisconsin. So the resources just, it's not there.
I'd be interested in hearing a success story. Someone who came out of the life and is now, generically, no names of course, but give us a success story, please.
I think success is measured by the little things that happen every day. We have a young woman, she's an adult, who we've been working with for about a week, and when we met her last week, she was in the ER due to injuries her trafficker gave her. This morning, she contacted me, and this is after all week of talking and getting her clothes and medications and into an undisclosed safe location. This morning she texted me. We've been talking just about what she wants moving forward, how we can support her. And she said she wants a job. And so I'm like, great. We will do everything on our end to get you options so you can pick from those options. And she contacted me this morning and said that she had just gone to the job center because she had updated her resume over the weekend and she was going to go and find herself a job. That is not anything that we didn't say, you should update your resume or you should do this. She did it. We had no idea it was coming. And I was like, do you want us to still, my response to her was, do you want us to still look for jobs for you? She said, yes, absolutely. But she's also looking on her own. That's success. That's success to us. Because even 2 weeks ago, she was not in this place. So that's success.
Congratulations. My question is, as you work with those that are being abused and trafficked, do you feel threatened? There's a danger element out there, isn't there?
For sure.
Because of the pimps and the traffickers?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, there's a reason this place is going to stay and not be identified, correct?
Right.
Why?
Definitely. Traffickers sometimes look for their abuser, or traffickers sometimes look for the ones that they're abusing. With the situation that we've been helping with for the past week or so, we were notified about the situation maybe 2-3 weeks ago before this individual was finally, well, she was ready to finally get away from this guy. But there were times where even when the police, they did a fake arrest at the courthouse because the trafficker was sitting in the parking lot waiting for her to come out of court.
Yeah.
They did a fake arrest.
To get her away from this guy. And she wanted it.
She specifically asked for the fake arrest.
Yeah, to get her to a safer place.
Yeah. She wanted to get away from this guy, and this trafficker, this abuser, was in the parking lot. And so they were trying to find out how can they sneak her out the building, and they determined to do the fake arrest. So as far as we know, this guy is still not in jail yet.
Right.
And so when Melania is going to meet with her and this other advocate who was there for a little bit, talking to Melania, we talked through safety planning, right? And
yeah.
Talking about just being aware. It's different things to talk about surroundings, other things that I won't go into, just to make sure we can do what we can on our end to keep us safe.
So have you felt threatened and endangered by trying to help someone out? No? Okay.
No, not directly.
No,
I wouldn't say.
I think my mindset, even with this young woman who we're helping, is she's been living this for years. So if I have a safety plan, I'm not going to leave her. I'm not going to leave her on her own to figure it out because I get a little nervous or I get like it doesn't have to. Do with me. It doesn't have to do with us. We knew what we were getting into, and we're going to always put ourselves in a position to help people, and we'll give ourselves situational awareness training, safety plans, everything that we need to do on our end to be able to respond to people where they're at. And sometimes it can get a little dicey, but we're not going to just duck out and leave them.
Okay, we've covered a lot of issues, and we're almost out of time. Is there any part of fighting trafficking that I haven't brought up that you want to bring up now? Anything? Anything come to mind? Any elements we haven't touched on? If not, I have a final question. You ready? How can residents of Southeast Wisconsin, NGOs, churches, how can they become more aware and take more steps to fight trafficking? That's my final question. I promise.
Do we each get a shot at it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
I'll start.
Yeah. I think they can just get involved, volunteer at agencies like Exploit No More. They have some projects coming up where people can get involved and donate your time, donate your money if you're able to. Get people out to train and have events. Our program, we do trainings statewide. We do events statewide. I know Exploit No More does similar things. And just kind of talk about the issue in a way that's true, right? Because I think a lot of times in private citizens or the media, we have certain narratives of trafficking that may not be true. So our recommendation is get the people out who know the issue and let's get the facts.
So they should raise their hand and be trained to yeah. become a volunteer.
Yeah.
Okay. Melania?
Absolutely. I think another thing is being accurate with what you're sharing on social media. Mm-hmm. There are so many articles that we are constantly sharing or reading that portray a victim. For example, a victim of trafficking, an underage victim of trafficking, is a child. When the media reports it as an underage woman, that's inaccurate, and that gives people a different image in their mind. So if you come across an article and the headline says something about a child prostitute or an underage woman, and really that underage woman is 14, share that article because it's important information, but write a caption that says, hey, also, let's just correct this. Let's correct this for the people who are reading this, as an underage woman is a child. So just being factual with what you're sharing, even if the media isn't portraying it as such, by being able to take 10 seconds to write a caption, you're reaching more people than you know.
Thank you. Jared?
I would say for those group of people, churches, the general population, community, to learn more. It's a complex issue, and you know, don't be naive about it. You know, many times people think that, you know, this situation, this thing won't happen to me, won't come near my door. But man, I tell you what, you know, with technology nowadays, how traffickers, how abusers can get to kids, can exploit people, it happens in so many different ways. Where, you know, if people know more, they can do better. And so knowing more about the issue and knowing how to respond properly, because that response to that, you know, if they find something on their child's phone, that response to that situation can make or break that situation right there, right? It can build up trust or it can tear it down. And so those are things that we do training sessions on, about, you know, what it is, how to handle it, how to spot it, what to do, and so forth. And so learning more and learning what you can do about it is so vital.
So you just advise parents to be sure they know what's on their kids' phones.
Oh my, yes.
So social media make your jobs harder?
Yes.
Oh goodness.
But
yeah.
It also makes it easier.
Yeah.
Because we can reach more people with accurate knowledge.
Yeah. For sure.
But that, yes, social media is a beast.
Social media, games, gaming, different things like that, where there's hidden communication.
Yeah.
And especially if parents aren't as engaged with checking their kids, their apps, like there's apps that are hidden apps where it looks like a calculator, but it's something else. It's a hidden messenger and different things like that. So it goes back to communication, having that type of engagement as a family, where there's expectations, there's the knowledge, like your stuff is going to get checked anytime, anywhere. I know your passwords, like, you know, you can't download any apps that are these type of hidden apps. Like, setting those type of boundaries and really being an intentional parent can do so much in helping to prevent the situation.
Great. Great. Jarrett, Melania, Josh, thanks very much. Good luck. I hope your house, which will not disclose the location of, thrives.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol. Wisconsin Eye would not exist without generous donors like you. Please visit wisi.org to make a donation today.